I'd like to call the Ways and Means Committee to order. The minutes of April 1st are in your packet. Representative Hamilton, did you study those?
I did, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hamilton would make the move then that the minutes from April 1st, 2009 be approved. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed? And carried. Members, in your packet is a revision of the budget resolution. And I would, to bring that before us, would like to move the amendment to the budget resolution entitled KNRES07A1. And maybe what I'll do is call on Mr. Marks to explain the two or three different resolutions, revisions, and why they need to be adopted this time.
Mr. Chair, members, I would just add, you also have a spreadsheet on legal size paper. The spreadsheet is the same one we used several weeks ago with the first resolution, except that there are two shaded columns to the second and third columns of numbers from the left side that show the changes here and outline those changes. Those changes work through in the rest of the calculations to the right side of the page. So then back on the amendment then, line 1.3 changes the total spending number from $30,650,482 to $30,628,127. This is a decrease of $22,355,000, and it represents what we'll come to a little later on here, the changes in the tax target and the changes in the transportation target. Then the second, the 1.4, the line 1.4 change is decreasing the transportation target by $7,560,000. That's because the transportation finance bill is going to spend $7,560,000 in fiscal 2009. So they're lowering their spending in fiscal 2010 and 11 by that amount, and the resolution limits 10 and 11.
And if I can interrupt, that's a kind of a cash flow problem from one fiscal year to another. So we're solving a cash flow problem for some transit, particularly rural transit, I believe. Mr. Mark?
Then the line 1.5 change is changing the energy target from 52,542 to 52,369. A decrease of $173,000, and that's simply because that bill spent $173,000 less. This $173,000 would drop to the amount that's available for claims and other bills. Then on line 1.6 is a change in the tax target from $1,673,982 to $1,659,187. This is a decrease of $14,795,000. This represents the cost of the federal conformity bill that was passed a couple weeks ago, the fiscal 2009 cost of the federal conformity bill. So that cost is occurring in fiscal 2009. The tax target in 10 and 11 is being lowered by that amount, which essentially reflects that they will have to raise that much more money in fiscal 10 and 11. And I would just point out that about $10 million of that revenue, of that amount, is already raised in the federal conformity bill, so that it's $10 million of that change is from the federal conformity bill as well, but this is aligning the tax numbers to include the federal conformity bill. Then the changes on lines 1.7 through 1.10 in the amendment would move federal stabilization account, fiscal stabilization account money, moves $5 million from what had been in a target for the tax committee to a target for the housing and public health bill. So it's establishing a $5 million fiscal stabilization account target for housing and public health and decreasing the tax committee amount from $21,140,000 to $16,140,000.
You heard the explanation. Thank you, Mr. Marks. Any questions at all? Any questions? Any questions? If not, then I will renew my motion for the amendment to the budget resolution A1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Members, we have a couple of small bills before us today. Representative Surge. Mr. Mahoney, would you like to move House File 925?
Chair.
Representative Mahoney moves that House File 925 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Registry. Mr. Sertich, your bill is here because of Representative Sertich. We call him more than other things. And you have an amendment, Representative Sertich,
to
the bill.
Mr. Chair, it's the 925A3 amendment.
Why don't I have the amendment? Okay. Representative Mahoney, would you like to move the amendment? And that puts the bill in the order that the author would like. And do you want to explain your amendment, Representative Sertich?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. I'll explain the bill and the amendment at the same time. Mr. Chair, members, this bill deals with our unemployment rate in Minnesota. I've also included a couple of articles from the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg as well on this issue. Members, for title memoriam, we've looked at our unemployment rate in a distinct way. There are six possible ways that you can look at your unemployment rate, going from the most narrow to the most broad. And we kind of picked somewhere right in the middle. It's called the U3 rate, and there are six unemployment rates to look at. The federal government, with the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, collect data for all of these different variations of it. And I'm proposing that we set up a model to collect the most broad measure of collecting unemployment. That's the U6 rate. And that way, I think we'll have a better understanding of who is unemployed in Minnesota and how we can best use our finite resources in state government to address their workforce concerns. The U3 rate right now essentially looks at data of who's unemployed, who's looking for a job, who's collecting unemployment. If we went to a more broad rate, the U6 rate, we'd be able to collect more data and find out what the barriers are to employment. This would include Minnesotans who are who have stopped looking for work, have become discouraged from looking for work, also those who would like a full-time job but have settled for a part-time job. And so I think it'd be very helpful to our public policy, but also to get a real honest picture of who is unemployed in Minnesota and what are the barriers to employment. Members, this bill passed through all the appropriate committees, was on the General Register, and then got pulled back because we finally got a fiscal note for the cost of this. And that should be included in your packet as well. It includes a $120,000 appropriation in fiscal year 10 because the Department of Economic Development, who would administer and measure this data, needs to set up a model, as they had to do with the U3 right away, because right now the data they collect is such a small sample size that they have to develop a model to extrapolate this data on a broader level. And so they would need a larger sum one time to do so, as they did back when they developed the U3 model. And they're aware of this and willing to develop this model, and then this information would be useful, I think, to us as we make our decisions down the road. And I would, and the good news about the federal stimulus dollars coming into this area is Minnesota is going to receive, I believe, about $9 million for unemployment administration, and this would just capture a very small portion of the $9 million to develop this model in a one-time basis.
We have the amendment before us. Any other discussion on the amendment, Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sertich. The $120,000 is one-time or ongoing?
Representative Sertich?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, the $120,000 is one time, and then after that it's $10,000 a year, and I'm hopeful within the department's budget, especially in this area, they can find the resources to do this. All of this data is collected by the federal government, and it's collected right now as well, so they would just be taking that data through the new model, just as they're doing with the U3.
Representative Holberg, to the amendment? Okay, any other discussion on the amendment? If not, we have the amendments before us, and Representative Mahoney renews his motion for the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, it depends on what time period you're looking at. They collect this data already, and right now, yearly, usually they release the U6 data monthly they release the U3 data, but they collect all of the data necessary, so they use it across the board. We would still be collecting the U3 data, so we'd have an apples-to-apples comparison with other states, but we would just be getting more information now than most other states gather.
Representative Holbrook.
We, of course, have historical data under the U3 model. How does the bill address a change in making these calculations and reporting what might be an artificial jump of the actual number, but it would be attributed to the change in the type of model that the state uses?
Representative Sertich. Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, they would still be collecting the U3 data, so there'd be the ability to see both numbers, to see historically where it is, and then there'd probably be a little asterisk somewhere to say that we use a new model now at some point. But you'd still be able to refer to the less broad, but more narrow U3 anytime you'd like. Both data would still be collected.
Representative Holbrook.
So does your bill change the required reporting to the U6 model as being the default number, as opposed to being able to look up the U6 model if you wanted to?
Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Holbrook, I would hope we would use the U6 data, as it's, I believe, more specific and has a better snapshot. I would hope other states would start to do this as well, but we would have both information. So I wouldn't actually choose my favorite child in this instance, but we'd have the ability to look at it, as I said before, apples to apples with the U3 with other states. But I think having more information is better.
Representative Holbrook.
How many other states use the U6 model as their standard?
Representative
Sertich. Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, nobody at this time. We would be the first.
Okay. Any other discussion? Any other discussion? And if not, Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House File 925, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
And carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
You're on your way. Representative Biner. Would you like to make a motion, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move that Senate File 643 pass and be referred to the General Register.
I've heard the motion. We have the Senate file in front of us. Has passed the Senate, that's Senate File 643. There is a fiscal note with that. Representative Reiner, would you like to explain your bill briefly?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate File 643 extends unemployment benefits to workers with reduced hours who participate in targeted training through the WIRED Federal Grant Program. WIRED stands for Workforce Investment and Regional Economic Development. In Minnesota, this program has been branded as the Renewable Energy Marketplace, with 16 projects being funded in a 36-county area, with the goal of supporting industry-led partnerships that will enhance the renewable energy industry. The extension of unemployment benefits is offered as a variation of the Shared Work Plan under Minnesota Statute 268-135, which was enacted in 1994 to reduce layoffs. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Members, you have the fiscal notes in front of you, and it comes from the other funds and not the general fund. It would be the unemployment fund. Any questions? Any questions? Any members? Yes, Representative Causey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question regarding the unemployment fund, which is funded by employers, and I'm wondering if any of this, and when somebody files for unemployment, the money actually comes out of the employer's account, who then would pay more in the following years to make up the difference. And I'm wondering how this would relate to that, if the employer who had cut the hours would then be the one that would be funding this program.
Representative Biner?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Scalzi, yes, that's exactly how it would proceed. The cost would be recouped over a four-year period by higher rates to the employers who are participating.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was very similar to Representative Scalzi's.
But I guess my question, Representative Reinert, it says here in 1.10 and 1.111, employers work reduced hours with the employer while taking the skills training. It implies to me that this is a voluntary reduction in work by the employee to take additional training. Is that still chargeable to the employer then, if they voluntarily reduce to go to school and then turn around and can the employer is charged for that? Is that correct?
Representative Brenner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, actually the direction of the decision is in the reverse order. The employers have fought this legislation so because they're already experiencing reduced work hours for teams. These are highly technical teams, and the employer is trying to maintain these teams as a unit. So when their hours have been reduced, instead of laying them off, they're trying to work with the shared work program to keep them in place. And normally under the shared work program, they would just have their days reduced from 5 to 4 or their hours reduced, you know, in a proportionate manner. These particular companies that would come under this program are being funded under the WIRED grant for additional training for their employees. And that training, I guess it's a partnership between the grant and the shared work program so that the employer can retain the team, and the team would go for training over a 10-week period on a one-day-a-week or half-day-a-week basis, depending on what arrangement the employer has with the post-secondary institution providing the training.
Representative Demmer, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then the employer does have a choice here. This isn't something that's just imposed upon them. They're working in conjunction as they try to ramp up the workforce and or help somebody in this program to get training for some other type of occupation or something like that.
Representative Breiner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, that's exactly correct. This legislation was fought by employers through DEED. DEED is fully supportive, as is the WIRED grant program, and it is an effort to retain high-tech employees who might, with reduced hours, otherwise seek employment in other locations.
Representative Bunn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bryant, I'm trying to sort out the shared work portion of this and the training portion of this. It sounds to me that we are asking all employers who paid into the workers, the unemployment fund, to pay for a training experience for offset the lost wages during a training experience for a small number of employers. And it sounds also like that these folks, after the training, are not going on to new employers, but in fact, the hope is that they'll be retained with their current employer, so they're not moving on to new jobs. And I'm just wondering about the... I could understand this proposal if it was the shared work idea of having, you know, only partially reduced employment and trying to get unemployment for it. I have a little less understanding about setting a precedent here when it's having a whole group of employers subsidize essentially the wages of employees with firms who these individuals allowed to get some training. So I'm trying to understand whether, if this training program didn't exist, the WIRED program didn't exist, would these workers still, would they still have been in the shared work program itself? They would be under these shared work agreements, and this training experience is just something that's overlaid on top of this issue.
Representative Byer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, actually, this legislation exists because some of these companies would not qualify under the shared work program as currently written. There is actually some legislation moving forward at the same time as this bill that Representative Ertl is carrying a revision of the shared work program so that it will be more comprehensive. But if you read the shared work legislation, you'll see that it applies to hourly employees, and the group has to be at least the size of 5 members, and so there's some specific restrictions, and DEED actually sought this legislation because they thought the restrictions in the current shared work program were too narrowly constructed. So this allows some smaller teams of highly skilled manufacturing employees to qualify under the shared work program. And it's partnered with the WIRED program in order to ensure the success of the WIRED program so that these, as I said, these employees and these high-tech teams don't end up seeking employment elsewhere because their skills are in high demand.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Representative Bunn, follow-up?
Just real briefly, is Mr. Chair and Mr. Ryan brought up possibly some indeed. With the original concept, I don't know how long we've had the shared work program with the unemployment insurance. I'm just wondering if fiduciarily speaking, that the unemployment compensation fund was set up in a way to really account for shared work experiences as being one of the things that employers would be funding or not. I mean, maybe that's beyond our time frame today, but it strikes me that it may not have been designed for that purpose because that would, you know, increase the number of payouts a whole lot.
President Briner, short answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, this program was set up in 1994, and the goal was to help reduce layoffs. And it is a very modest program. It has, when Lee Nelson was asked to comment on how it would affect the unemployment fund and our deficit this year, he said about if we'd go into deficit 2 hours earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very modest expenditure. And for the goal of saving very high-quality workforce. So I think it's a balancing issue.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Any other questions? If not, then Representative Briner renews her motion that Senate File 643, Kirsten Grossman, be recommended to pass and place in the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? And carried. Okay. Thank you. Representative Hilty. Members, we have available the Senate version because the Senate has passed this. The chair will move that Senate file number 550 be the second engrossment be recommended passed and re-referred to the General Registry. Then in your packet is the House version, and I would assume that Representative Hilty would like to have the House version put back into the Senate language. Is that correct, Representative?
That would be my desire, Mr. Chair.
So the chair would move the amendment titled A09-0403. That's the House version of the Senate language. Any discussion on the amendment? Representative Hoppe. Representative Holbrook. Well, you guys can fight over who wants to talk.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would urge us not to adopt the House language. There are a number of things in this language, and I serve on the Energy Committee, and we did put a lot of work into this bill. But there are a lot of things here that, you know, we're passing along to the ratepayers. And there, frankly, are some things in the bill that I think the Senate did better. One of them is to lift the moratorium on talking about nuclear. A new nuclear plan. There are some other things in the bill that I think the Senate has better language on. And a lot of these provisions, the seabed provisions, the central corridor provision, and maybe most especially or most egregiously, the conservation measure that Representative Kalin put in, and I believe at the behest of Xcel Energy, I mean, these are all things that we're not paying for and Xcel's not paying for, the ratepayers are paying for. And we made this point in the Energy Committee, and I'll make it here, and I'll probably make it again on the floor. But these are things that we're putting all these programs and all these different offerings in place, and the utilities aren't paying for them. They just pass it along right to the ratepayers. That's our constituents and our consumers and the citizens of Minnesota. And, you know, we're just passing all these things along, and people are just paying more for their energy, both homes and businesses. And I'll talk about House File 1605, which lets utilities have conservation be their most profitable resource. And that sounds good, but really what I think you're talking about is somebody that in their home or business, if they put in more energy efficient windows or add more insulation or do other things to make their property more cost efficient, so they're using less, you know, electricity or natural gas or whatever it would be, they might use less of that resource. They're not necessarily going to see their bill go down because we're going to allow Xcel or other utilities to charge them more to make up for the difference. So what then becomes the incentive for people to save money or to put new conservation measures into their home or business if they're not actually going to see a cost savings? So, Mr. Chair, I can go on, but I would urge us to with all due respect to Chair Hilty, who I like and I think has done a nice job with the bill, I would encourage us to keep the Senate language and at least talk about some of these things on the House floor.
And
Representative Holbrook,
if I might, I'd like to request a roll call vote on your amendment.
Roll call's been requested. Any other discussion? Representative Hilty?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would ask members to adopt the House language. I think that we have had a pretty thorough vetting of the of this bill in my committee. Certainly there's a lot of things that need to be discussed with the Senate and on the House floor, but I, having served on the Ways and Means Committee, I don't really think that it has a tradition of morphing itself into a policy committee at the last moment, and I think it would be appropriate to let this bill proceed as we normally would expect it to.
Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to point out that there's this long established custom in the Minnesota House that when a bill comes forward that we adopt the author's position on the bill when he's requested that it move forward as the committee, in this case, put the bill together. And so I would urge folks to support the author in his request to have the bill move forward as it was drafted.
Any other questions? Any other discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Solberg?
The motion before us is to adopt the House, right? Yes.
Yeah.
I had to think of how I wanted to vote.
Abler? Reinhart?
Yes.
Bunn?
Yes.
Carlson?
Yes.
Davids?
No.
Dean? Demmer?
No.
Deacon?
Yes.
Faust?
Yes.
Hamilton?
No.
Kilstrom?
Yes.
Holberg?
No.
Hoppy?
No.
Huntley?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Lenchevsky?
Yes.
Mahoney?
Yes.
Mariani? McNamara? Nelson?
Yes.
Otremba?
Yes.
Rude?
Yes.
Scalzi?
Yes.
Seifert? Swales?
Yes.
Tilbury?
Yes.
I have it at the time.
There being 17 ayes and 5 nays, the amendment is adopted. We have the House version then before us of Senate File 550. Representative Hilty, by the way, members, there is a fiscal note in your packet. You want to give us just a very brief explanation, particularly on the fiscal portion?
Mr. Chair, I think the sections that would be of interest to the committee are sections 2 and 33. Section 2, provision that actually continues funding of the University of Minnesota's Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment, which this is funded at $5 million a year from the Renewable Development Fund. That is a continuation of the practice that we have had previously. And likewise, in Section 33, there's an appropriation, again, from the Renewable Development Fund for the Clean Energy Resource Team. And likewise, that has the search teams have been funded in the last biennium through the RDF. And this represents a 10% reduction of the funding from the previous biennium.
Members, if you look at the fiscal note, The fiscal note was drafted as the bill was introduced way back in March 2nd. Mm-hmm. It doesn't reflect the current problem or the current spending in this particular bill. The author has described the two expenditures, I believe, that continue on, and they're not general fund expenditures, I believe. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I've got a question not to the fiscal end of this, but I'm just trying to follow the bill brief.
Sure.
And this has got Section 44 in the House Research Bill Summary. The bill goes to 34. So is there a different bill summary someplace?
Representative Hilty, can you have an explanation of that as well?
Or could you get it to us later?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, the up-to-date version of the 34 sections, the bill in its original form had a number of sections related to a bill by Representative Lilly that has been taken out of the bill because that was moving separately.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Mahoney.
Is there... Mr. Representative Hilty, could you find a current one or have your staff find a current one and pass it along?
I have a current one right here.
That'd be good. I'm sure your staff will get it to me later.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Any other questions at all? Yeah, Representative Holbrook?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering how this is going to work. I saw an email from Representative Thurditz that said that this omnibus bill was going to be combined in finance with another omnibus bill, and I'm wondering if the situation has changed or...
Representative Holbrook, the financing of the main financing bill will be combined in finance committee with environment, I believe. And this one is more of the policy bill, which except for those two different sections that do not spend general fund money.
Okay. And I guess I'm a little concerned that we're passing something without a current fiscal note. So does somebody have a cheat sheet that shows how much is being spent in the various funds?
Sure.
Or
why don't we call him Mr. Marks? I think the author explained that, but let's have Mr. Marks. That's a very good question.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Hilty mentioned the two sections that have fiscal effect. Section 2 is directing $5 million of spending from this non-state account called the Renewable Energy Development Account. It's the account that XL Energy is required to deposit money in for dry storage caps, And this is requiring $5 million of spending in fiscal 11 and thereafter from that account. And then section 33, which is on page 25, transfers $563,000 in fiscal 10 and in fiscal 11 from that account to the state special revenue fund and then appropriates it for community energy technical assistance and outreach on renewable energy and energy efficiency. And so those would be the two sections that have fiscal impact. If we had a fiscal note at this point, it would show a net zero. It would show $563,000 a year being transferred into the special revenue fund and $563,000 a year being spent in 10 and 11 from the special revenue fund for Section 33. The Section 2 language would not show up in a fiscal note because it's not a state account.
All right. Thank you. And if I might have a question of the author. Last night, our local news program reported that 25% of the ratepayers were past due in their accounts with them, and I'm just wondering what in your bill will reduce costs for ratepayers.
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, In the short term, I don't believe there's anything in the bill that would either increase or decrease cost to ratepayers. In the long term, I would think that a number of things that we're setting in motion would have the effect of decreasing rates or at least holding them down in light of rising costs.
Okay. Any other discussion at all? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hilty, you might want to amend your last comments here as far as not raising rates, because obviously Section 7 would raise rates if you're going to change everything that was done in the 25 by 25 going to these 5 megawatt. We heard a lot of testimony in committee that would could drastically raise utility rates. So you might want to amend your statement, because Section 7 would raise rates to consumers. This bill raises rates to consumers with Section 7 in there.
Representative Hilty?
Mr. Chair, Representative David, I think maybe there's been a lot of misunderstanding about Section 7. It started out as a different proposal than it is represented in this bill. There isn't anything in Section 7 that requires any different price negotiation than is taking place with any other renewable energy project. So there's no implication that it would raise rates any more than anything else that is currently being done to satisfy the renewable energy standards.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative David,
with all due respect, I don't think that's accurate at all, because if you're forcing utilities to buy from facilities of under 5 megawatts, and yes, we did take the language out at a certain that put the price in there, but if you're forcing them to buy from those smaller facilities, that's going to raise the price.
I don't mind you having a discussion on the bill itself, but remember, it's here for the fiscal impact on the bill. Representative Hoppe?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief and just talking about the fiscal impact. I think if you look at both Section 4 and 5, there's enormous potential for increase in rate pay. I mean, in Section 4, we're allowing XL Energy to pass these conservation costs along in the form of increased rates to the ratepayers for increased the implementation of conservation programs.
Okay. Any other discussion? Any other discussion? If not, then the chair will renew his motion that Senate File 550, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed in the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
And carried. Members, the Finance Committee is going to be in here in about 4 minutes, so we're going to adjourn, but keeping, I think our next meeting for Ways and Means is tomorrow. I don't remember what time. 11 o'clock. Room 10. Meeting is adjourned.